together so you can speak to him together.
All right.
Good afternoon. It is Thursday, June 7th, 2012. It is 2 p.m. and the city council will come back from recess. Carla, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
How can you say that with all this rain?
It's not like it indoors.
You're perpetually optimistic. I love that about you. Can you please call the roll?
Yes. Ish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Fritz?
Yeah.
Adams?
Here. This quorum is present. We're going to be considering a non-emergency ordinance, 668, and a resolution, 669. Could you please read the titles of both items, and we'll be having explanations and taking testimony for both.
Mm-hmm. 668, amend regulations for food production and distribution to increase Portlanders' access to healthful, affordable food. And 669, establish baseline indicators and adopt goals for the Portland food system.
Thank you. Portlanders love food. Portland people who live and work here like to eat, cook, grow, and talk about food. Along with the love of food, there is a concern that many in our community are hungry or don't have access to healthful food because of income or location. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is bringing forward a baseline of indicators and goals at my request to address food accessibility and affordability and promote urban food production to help ensure that our citizens are not hungry. Additionally, we've initiated a code review process to remove obstacles to urban food production and distribution. The Urban Food Zoning Code update will increase access to helpful, healthful, affordable food by removing zoning code barriers to growing, buying, and selling food, particularly in neighborhoods. Food is a complex public policy area that has many connections to our community's health and vitality. The zoning code project is a great example of the connection between sustainability and planning, and it is a great connection between the four goals of the city being an educated, healthy, equitable, and prosperous place. Removing the barriers to urban food production and distribution recognizes the dedication and hard work of our urban food producers. The code revisions will help make the city healthier, more equitable, and greener. We'll hear from Michael Armstrong about food metrics. We'll hear from Joe Zinder, can you come on up, and Steve Cohen about the Urban Food Zoning Code update. And we'll get started.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Michael Armstrong with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. As the Mayor indicated, he had asked the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to develop a baseline assessment of the food system that serves Portland, together with indicators that measure that and propose goals. And that's what you have in front of you in the resolution with the exhibit attached. Working with the Food Policy Council, with Multnomah County staff, with Portland State University, BPS created a long list of indicators together with data that's available from a variety of sources, local, state, national, in some cases private. You may also recall that the Portland Plan included a pretty hefty background report on the food system. Last year, the city was awarded a grant from the national organization, the Mayor's Innovation Project, and their staff worked with us to research international best practices around metrics for sustainable food. That report helped us refine the indicators that we had been developing, and that's what led then to what you have as Exhibit H, the resolution, this list of metrics and proposed goals. These goals address food accessibility and affordability, the production of food in the city, the preservation of farms in the region, so that the three-county area, and strengthening links with urban areas through farmers markets and community-supported agriculture. The goals also address hunger, food processing and manufacturing, and residents' knowledge of healthy eating. So the resolution from you would formally establish these as goals of the city and direct the Bureau to report back every 2 years on progress toward those goals. Happy to answer questions about the goals if you have them at this time. We can also go into the description of the code project.
Why don't we do that and see if there are additional discussion after that. Who's going to go first?
Go ahead, Joe. I'll do the introduction.
So today, as the mayor noted, you're going to be hearing about the urban food zoning code updates, and the Bureau and the Planning and Sustainability Commissions are recommending this package of ordinances to you as a significant step to increase access to healthful, affordable food for all Portlanders, especially those who have limited access. So the project will increase access by removing barriers in the zoning code and also clarifying and streamlining those recommendations regarding growing, buying, and selling food, particularly in neighborhoods. So while farmers markets, community gardens, backyard farming CSAs, and food buying clubs have dramatically increased in the city, our regulations have not kept pace. We expect this kind of food production and alternate distribution models to become even more common in the future. And so the proposals that you're going to be hearing will allow these systems to flourish at a scale that works for neighborhoods protecting neighborhood livability. A key principle that the team was working with to prepare this was focused on health and equity, increasing the health of Portlanders, increasing Portlanders' access to healthy and affordable foods. And since even a small cost can be a barrier for some, this proposal has very little in the way of permit fees, land use reviews, and the like. So almost all situations will be allowed outright if standards are met. So today, the details of the project and about a bit of its background will be presented by Steve Cohen, who's the manager of food policy programs at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and Julia Giesler, who was the project manager for this overall project. She was supported by Jessica Richmond. And I'd also like to mention Amy Gilroy of the Office of Public Health, the Oregon Public Health Institute, excuse me, who helped on the project significantly, especially around health inequity. And both the Institute and the city received funds from Multnomah County Health Department, federal funds from the Center for Disease Control, Community Pudding Prevention to Work grant to prepare this project. With that, I'll turn it over to Steve.
Thanks. Well, Steve, my first question for you is, how are we supposed to grow tomatoes in weather like this?
Big dome.
Big dome. Geodesic dome over the city. That's why you're in charge.
Pyramid.
Steve?
Thanks. So when a food policy and program position was created, there were already existing files that contained a stack of documents from the Food Policy Council as well as other citizen groups, and they all addressed the fact that farmers markets, which were proliferating at that time, were not identified or described in the existing Portland zoning code, and there were a number of resulting siting problems due to this omission. And then over the next 5 years, after that, other obstacles to distributing and growing food in the city were identified, and those discussions were informed and amplified by the work of the Diggable City Project, PCAL Task Force, Climate Action, and Portland Plans, and numerous on and in the ground projects. So while much work has been done, many community voices have long advocated for a code review to expand healthy options and affirm the city's commitment to forging a stronger connection between Portland residents and their food. So a decade-long discussion and the mayor prioritizing this project led to the recommendations you are considering today. But this policy is only the beginning, as BPS will continue to work with other bureaus and community partners to affirm the city's commitment to producing and distributing food in a way that promotes equity and economic, environmental, and personal health.
Thanks, Steve. I'm Julia Giesler with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. First, I'd like to start with some acknowledgments. This project required a steep learning curve for staff, especially learning about the different food-related activities. Initially, we worked with the members of the Portland Multnomah Food Policy Council to be sure that we had identified the right issues and the right community stakeholders. Later in the project, after we had a chance to work with the general public and to arrive at a general framework and concepts for how we were going to structure the regulations, we established a code development advisory group called our CDAG to help us test and develop the actual code language. Members of this group were our experts, our advisors, our debaters, and our reality checkers. and their names are listed in the front of our report, or in the beginning of our report, and you'll also be able to hear some of them testify today. But because their work was so significant to this project, I'd like to ask the members of the CDAG that are here to stand, if you could. It was an amazing group of people. We learned so much from them. So now for the recommendations. So the amendments that you are going to be reviewing today are divided into four topic areas. There's market gardens where produce is grown for sale, community gardens where produce is grown for personal consumption and donation, farmers markets, and then the last one, we have a new term called food membership distribution sale sites. And those are the sites where the pickups and the drop-offs for CSAs and food buying clubs occur. For each topic area, we added definitions to the code and developed specific regulations to support these activities. At the same time, we wanted to be sure that they were appropriately sized and located to be compatible, especially in the residential areas. So while we are very liberally allowing all these activities in almost all of the zones throughout the city, we are also adding regulations to address neighborhood livability. The amendments also clarify the regulations for market gardens and community gardens, farmers markets, and food membership distribution sites when they are added to the site of an institution such as a school or a faith-based facility or a medical center. Because these are often the best places for these activities to occur, especially in our neighborhoods. We are allowing all of these activities, the amendments would allow all these activities on all institutional sites. And I want to quickly go through the recommended zoning code changes for each of the topic areas. They can be found on the handout that we passed out to you in the matrix in the top. And also they're on page 2 of the document. So for market gardens, that's again where produce is grown for sale, currently market gardens are allowed in only a few zones. The amendments will allow them in all zones with size limitations in residential zones and include regulations that address neighborhood livability. They will also be allowed to have limited farm sales where they can sell produce from that's grown on that site. Community gardens currently are allowed everywhere, and we are going to continue to allow them everywhere, adding a few regulations for neighborhood livability. The food membership distribution sites, currently there are no regulations for, or currently the regulations for pickup sites for the food buying clubs and the CSA organizations are unclear, and the code is silent. So the amendments will allow food membership distribution sites throughout the city and include regulations that address any negative impacts to the surrounding area. Farmers markets are currently regulated as temporary uses. However, the regulations are confusing and are not always a good fit for how the markets operate. The amendments will continue to regulate them as temporary uses, but will add regulations specifically for farmers markets. So that's just a quick general overview. And we also, in the beginning of the report, on page 8 and 9, have more details on the recommended amendments. So that concludes our staff presentation. Also on the handout that I passed out, you'll find the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendations, which include directing staff to continue to work on outreach and education efforts about the new opportunities these amendments can provide to increase access to healthful, affordable food, especially to communities with less options.
Mm-hmm. Initial questions? I think we have an amendment. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd like to at least get my amendment out there, and if people want to comment on it, but pass it out. So this amendment relates to the section on farmers markets, and it would add a sub D that would say that vendors at farmers markets, vendors who have third-party organic certification must display a seal or certification document so that it is visible to customers passing the booth or table. And the rationale really is, and I can attest to this from firsthand experience, is we're the market. We want to make sure that if our booth or vendor is purporting to sell organic food, that it in fact has the appropriate certification, third-party certification, and that third-party certification is displayed for consumers. I think this increases consumers' knowledge about food and where it comes from, and I think it's only fair that those who are saying they have organic products have in fact truly certified organic products.
So moved and seconded. Any discussion, comments?
Yeah, I have a discussion. I just have a discussion here. We're going to put it, lay it before the council and then have a discussion, or you want to have that now?
Why don't we go and have a discussion now?
So I guess I would say to staff, is this an issue that came up in your work?
No.
Did we hear from the public on this, or industry, or from farmers markets, or anyone?
Not on this particular issue, no.
I have not seen the amendment before right now. Dan, is this something you've discussed with farmers markets?
Yes. Discussed it with Steve, the head of Portland Farmers Markets. Yes.
And Steve, what's the position of our farmers market partners?
It's mixed, and actually, I don't know if Trudy Tolliver, who is the executive director of the Portland Farmers Markets, could speak to that probably better than any of us. Willing to do that?
Trudy, could you?
Oh, should we just come
up? Yeah, would you please come up?
Commissioner Saltzman, I know you and I spoke about this morning, and I apologize that it was after I spoke with you on the phone this morning that I learned some more information from some of the other market managers in the region. So what I have to share, I guess, is sort of a culmination of comments collected from others. So I apologize that you and I spoke about something a little bit different than what I might say now. In general, I think what our market managers feel is that the city code is not necessarily a place where an operational issue such as signage should be set, and that currently we're already practicing exactly what you're suggesting, and that anyone that is certified with an organic and some other certifications by a third-party provider does display that, and it is to their benefit as a business decision that they would make, that if they've got an organic certification, they want to talk about it. So that is actually already happening. There's some additional concern that there are so many types of certifications out there. Farm workers management practices is probably an up-and-coming one that I could use as an example, that it would kind of lead the question that do you want your code to show to include this kind of a signage regulation, and then does that open the door to wanting to add all of these other possible regulations, or should that be left up to the operations of the farmers markets to decide?
So if I can just, because I'm trying to understand this, I'm not arguing it yet, I'm just trying to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So currently, it's your understanding that there's some voluntary measures in place about encouraging vendors to display organic certifications?
That's right.
And how do the operators police that?
When we sign up a vendor, we require that if they have an organic certification, that they show us that documentation. And therefore, then they are allowed to show signage indicating such.
And when you think of what a, quote, third-party organic certification is, can you tell us can you, by memory, tell us all of what they may be?
Absolutely not, and I don't think many of us can.
My memo speaks to USDA-approved third-party organizations, so that is a finite universe.
Well, your amendment doesn't specifically reference that.
Well, I'd be happy to add that. It's simply
not. It doesn't say USDA or otherwise.
I'd be happy to add that word. I'd be happy to add that.
And if it doesn't speak to it, Dan, it's not on the face of it, so that's why I need to ask these questions. Okay. I don't know what third-party organic certification means. I'm assuming that grocery stores have had some experience with this, farmers markets have experience with this, and I'm not sure what the problem we're trying to solve. In the farmers market that you manage, have you had complaints from customers about this issue?
About the lack of signage?
About the questions about whether people are actually selling organic food, or more specifically, whether they're making claims that they can't back up?
Not the latter. Not to my knowledge, we had complaints about farmers not being able to back up claims. We do not allow farmers to make claims that aren't certified. So in our markets, and it's true for many of the others, a farmer can only display the organic certification, organic word, actually, if they are, in fact, USDA certified. And that USDA certification can come from any variety of independent certifying bodies.
If, I'm just curious, if you're already sort of doing that as a matter of practice, what then is the impact of code language which may track what you're already doing? So, I mean, what's the practical concern if they codifies, in effect, what reputable market people are already doing?
Right. Good question. I mean, it does two things. One, it is innocuous. It's fine. It would not change what we're doing. What it could do down the road is initiate a city code that starts to include all kinds of details about operational issues, such as other types of signage. That's our concern.
So, Mr. Salzman, if you would add the language you've agreed to add, certifying body has to be approved by all second.
Okay.
Has that been seconded?
Adding the USDA into the language of the amendment.
Friendly amendment. Okay.
So who enforces this?
The certification or the signage, or which?
Either.
The market managers enforce the signage. We do the best we can anyway. Remember that each of our vendors are independent businesses of their own. The certification is managed by the individual certifying bodies. Maybe Steve actually knows a little bit more about that.
So the USDA is actually the certifying body, and they work with over 50 domestic certifiers. There's 6 or 7 in Oregon. So there are numerous third-party certifiers just for the USDA organic label.
Thank you. So, and Commissioner Salzman, what was your intent in having it in the code? Would BDS be enforcing it then, if it's in the code?
Well, like any zoning code provision, it's complaint driven, and you know, with all due respect to the, I am a consumer, a customer of farmers markets, and what you described about everybody who has organic certification displaying it is simply not true. As recently as yesterday's market, somebody in my office went up and I know this too, there's only one at the Lonsdale Square or the Schmancy Square that actually displays their organic certification. That's not the only vendor that claims to be organic. And the same with the Hillsdale Farmers Market. So
right.
it's not the fact what you just said,
right,
that they are
and
displayed.
That's a really tricky distinction that you just made as well. Being a certified organic producer is very different than practicing organic.
We're not talking about practicing, we're just talking about displaying your third party.
Okay. I was under the impression that they all do, and we encourage them all to. So
can I
say they might say that they're organic and they aren't actually certified.
This discussion is very helpful for me. Can I just ask one other question of our code people? So if this is in our code and it is complaint driven, and someone from the Bureau of Development Services determines that at a moment in time someone does not have the requisite seal or certification document displayed, what happens? Aside from hauling people off to jail, and no, which is what is? What, I'm just curious. What is the? Because we want to get past symbolism here, and apparently this codifies what some folks are already doing. So what is the remedy?
I'm not sure how we would enforce this, meaning the city, because if somebody doesn't display the certification and had not shared it with the operator of the farmer's market, we would presume that they're not certified. So it's sort of like proving a negative. But if we did receive a complaint that somebody was certified and not showing their certification, I suppose that the BDS code enforcement people would contact them and ask if they were certified, and if they were, ask them to display a seal or certificate documenting that.
And if there was some problem convincing that vendor to display, if you can determine that they actually have third-party organic certification that's USDA approved, and determine that they haven't displayed it, is the vendor liable for something under our code, or does the farmer's market become liable for some action?
The way that this is written, and I wrote it, so it's not Commissioner Salzman's fault, is the responsibility would be the markets, ultimately.
The markets?
Yes.
The operator of
the operator of the market.
So does that have the effect of shifting to the operator the obligation then, in the first instance, to say to all vendors in some kind of document, do you claim that your product's organic, and if so, do you have a third-party certification so that they can police this?
From what Ms. Tolliver just said, I think they already are asking them if they are certified.
That's correct.
But then practically, you wanted to avoid this situation. The operator, that's what you do.
And last question, is this standard that we're imposing through this amendment the same standard that applies to grocery stores?
No. This would only apply to farmers markets.
Well, I'm going to respectfully request that we table this matter until we've had a chance to. I mean, I think it's an interesting concept, and on the face of it, the first time I've heard about it was 5 minutes ago. It may very well be worthy of inclusion in our code, but Mayor, until I understand the practical impact and frankly the equity of whether this applies to one category that sells fruits and vegetables or an industry, I would propose we table this.
What's that? Yeah, what would be, why just deal with farmers markets and not more broadly?
Well, because this is the issue in front of us. I mean, this code deals with farmers markets. There's no code provision we have governing supermarkets or others. So this is my, as a consumer and customer of farmers markets, this is always something that's bothered me. And, I guess I'm a member of the public, too, and I have a right to participate in this process, and this is my venue for participating in this process. It's this code language has been written by Jessica. It's been vetted. So, and I think to follow up through these bottom-line analysis, it's innocuous, but it does enhance customer choice. And you can worst-case scenario these things to death. And
can I just ask a question, Dan? If this has bothered you for a long time, this task force has been working for over a year on this work product. Is there a reason this could not have been introduced so that they could offer an opinion on it before we do this on the fly?
I respect the work of the task force. I guess I also respect the role of the city council to have the ability to introduce amendments before we ask to vote on something. That's kind of what we're here for.
So Mayor, I'd like to hear testimony on this, and also.
Well, I haven't recognized the motion yet, nor have I, but I will please.
Thank you. I'd like to hear testimony on this, and since it's a non-emergency ordinance, there is more time before next week to vote on it.
Commissioner Salzman, I'm just trying to round out the discussion. I totally agree with you in terms of we are an important part of the process, and the ability to bring forward changes at our step in the process is entirely legitimate. And from a public policy perspective, is there my question is more about the public policy aspect of it. I understand that we're not seeking to regulate commercial grocery stores here, and that's why we wouldn't necessarily. But from a public policy standpoint, is it safe for me to assume that you would like the same kind of rigor in commercial grocery stores that you would like in farmers markets? Is that something that you agree?
Sure.
Okay. But this is your explanation is this the venue where we're talking about farmers markets?
Right. Okay. And I think, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to speak, but I think supermarkets, large stores, probably bear a lot more potential liability for misrepresenting produce than maybe a farmers market. And all we're saying is this, if you got the third-party certification, just please post the notice so consumers can make informed choices. Healthy informed choices.
On this question, would it make a difference to the council whether the responsibility was imposed on the vendor or the market?
Does it make a difference? I guess that's a question in the back of my mind, Commissioner Salzman. Is it
I understand the rationale in terms of you would be able to go to an organizer of a market and say, have you looked at the certification of everyone who's claiming to be organic, and you would sort of have one-stop shopping. But in separate from the penalties, did you consider penalties to the individual as opposed the individual vendor as opposed to the market? Or maybe I should ask you.
The way that our code is structured, the regulations apply to the market.
Yeah.
Not to the individual vendor, so I'm not sure that we could.
And what's the fine?
Well, the fine for violations of the zoning code after there have been some hearings and such is, I believe, up to $500 a day per violation. That's what true. Yeah.
And would that be a violation per vendor or?
The federal fines of claiming that you're organic when you're not. Yes. If you claim that you're organic and you aren't, actually, the federal fine is $5,000.
By the way, if I might just, Mayor, if I could. I'm going to finish.
So is it five? Ours is $500 maximum
per
fine?
Day.
It would be, and so we're talking about the land use code here. That's part of, I think, why it's confusing. It goes to the operator of the use. You know, you're dealing with the owner or the operator of an apartment building, not the tenant. And so it would be a per violation. So depending how it gets reported and into the system, you know, several of these vendors could be multiple violations, Mayor, or they could be a single, depends on how it happens.
Okay. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right.
I think Trudy politely said she was concerned about the camel's nose under the tent. So let me just take that point for a moment. As someone who shops in farmers markets a lot, I have concerns that people are following good hygiene. I have concern that they're not using underage workers. I would prefer that they're not engaging in violations of agricultural laws and the harvesting and production of food. I would like to know if it does or does not have pesticides, if there was some ranking system. I could probably come up with a laundry list, and I guess, with all due respect, if this is a council concern about the level of disclosure to the public and what has been a lightly regulated industry for a reason, I would suggest we do this in a comprehensive way and not in a ad hoc way, and that we carefully consider what the regulatory impact. Commissioner Leonard the other day spoke very eloquently about his concerns about heavy-handed regulations.
On diapers.
Oh, diapers. You said that, I didn't. But you also spoke eloquently about looking at intermediate steps around voluntary measures and other kinds of things before. And I'm not suggesting anyone would misuse our code. That certainly never happens. But I would be concerned about putting a mechanism into our code that could be misused, particularly where we haven't, in my judgment, carefully thought through the ramifications of this. And I have just the same interest, since we have children at home, of feeding them food that's healthy and certified. But I would urge that I think this is a well-intentioned amendment, but I think it's premature for us to take it up, and I would like to have some processing of this before we take
it. So I have a further clarifying question. So if this is a zoning code violation, so there's the penalty of $500 per zoning code violation, depends on how the complaint came in, and that is also true of other zoning code violations, single address or multiple violations at an address.
Correct.
And it is complaint driven under state law. If it's a zoning code violation, remind me again what the violation follow-up process is. So that was the fine, but what is it? What are the steps?
Go to Kristen. Do you know that process?
Representative from BDS.
Thank you. And we'll have you come up again if you want later. I think it's a good discussion. Ask everyone to be patient.
I'm Kristen Cooper with the Bureau of Development Services, and I'm not in enforcement, so I don't necessarily have the last word. Mr. Saltzman might know more about enforcement because he hears about it in his office. I would just say one thing clarifying, because I think the amendment that if you, as I understand it, was if you are certified, that you display the seal, not that that you're displaying the seal and you're not certified. So. It's not like we're policing whether or not someone's certified. But the enforcement goes, a letter's written to the property owner requesting that they correct the violation, and then they have 30 days. And then if it's not corrected, it can go to hearing, and that's when there's a fine that's assigned.
Okay, so this, and then could I switch you out with Steve, who seems to know something about the federal process? But this says vendors who have third-party, I assume that the legislative intent here is vendors who claim to be selling organic produce have to display
a certification.
Okay, I just wanted to double check. So what is the $5,000 fine? Does that apply to the fining system around certified organic, does that apply to farmers markets?
It would apply to farmers market vendors.
Vendors. And what's the process for people to complain about that?
Yeah, in that particular case, I don't think there's been any instances where they have gone through the market. They would have to complain to the, in this case, probably the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Okay, who serves as the agent for the federal government?
Correct.
Okay. All right, I'm going to not take the vote, and we're going to proceed with testimony. I need to think about it while I hear the testimony on this particular motion. I think I have the ability to do that.
So can I just offer one comment before we do that?
Yes.
Response, Commissioner Fish. Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate what Commissioner Fish is saying, but I also say you've got to start somewhere. This is fairly innocuous. It's simply saying if you have that certification, display it so the consumers know that. And you know, we're sure we could tackle GMO, pesticide-free, workers' rights, fair trade. Well, we could do all that, but we'll be back in maybe 5 years with something solved on that. Why don't we take a baby step now, give consumers the information they're entitled to know, and make sure that our vendors who say they're organic display their certification.
Okay, and we're going to go to testimony. I would really love to go to testimony, but first I'll hear from Commissioner Leonard, who had his hand up before you, and then to Commissioner Fritz, and then we're going to go to testimony. In the meantime, Steve or somebody else, can you just call somebody or have somebody else that is in staff call the Department of Agriculture to confirm that you can, as a customer, file a complaint? And this gentleman here might have some knowledge of it, but if I guess for me, if an existing complaint process exists that is not in the zoning code, that might sway how I think about adding a complaint within the zoning code. So, Commissioner Leonard.
So I just procedurally, I want to address the process that we're involved in right now, because the comment was made that this is the first reading, your testimony will vote next week. The amendment we need to dispose of today.
Yeah.
So it either becomes part of the second reading or not today. So that needs to be taken up. To the amendment, I will just say I don't find it inherently wrong or a violation of process for a member of council to offer an amendment of an exhaustive public process, if and when we identify issues that we think are of importance. I have to say, listening to the discussion, I agree with Commissioner Saltzman's take on this, that if you're representing something to be something, it shouldn't be too much to ask you to back that up with a certified organization of the FDA. Not the FDA, is it the FDA?
Yes, Department
of Agriculture recognizes.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. At the beginning of this discussion, you asked if anyone had questions for staff, and then Commissioner Leonard Salzman introduced his amendment. I actually do have questions for staff, if I might have them come back.
Yes.
And this is in relation to the new category of market gardens, which we will be allowing commercial sales from in residential zones under certain specifications. My first question is that you don't have any requirements for parking, and I wondered whether that's been discussed throughout the process and why that choice was made.
We did discuss it and felt that most of the market gardens would be selling, because they're limited to 70 days per year, and because they can only sell what they grow on site, that they would largely be attracting customers from the nearby areas. And so we would have a very high proportion of people walking or biking, because most people won't drive across town to get a tomato. And that the numbers who would arrive in cars would be relatively small. Another concern is that the market gardens often are a source of some revenue for lower income people. A lot of recent immigrants have been doing market gardens and selling, for example, at the farmers market, and that requiring off-street parking, which requires a curb cut and is pretty expensive to put in on a site that doesn't have parking now, would be rather expensive, and we thought that might be a significant barrier.
What about some of the larger sites in the RF zones? That site could be 6 acres.
Right now, agriculture is allowed there without a parking requirement, so we weren't changing that.
Okay, and then thank you for that explanation. My second question is that sales are allowed between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m., 70 days a year. So you could have consecutively 70 days of being woken up at 7 o'clock in the morning if people are arriving to get the produce, slamming their car door. How was that discussed at the Planning and Sustainability Commission as far as the impacts on residential neighbors?
The commission didn't discuss it. Nobody had raised that as an issue there, but we discussed it in the Code Development Advisory Group, that it was the same hours that we use for operation of home occupations.
Including Sundays, home occupations can be 7 a.m. on Sundays.
Yes. Another thing that I think we didn't discuss directly, but that affected us, is originally we had talked about limiting the hours for farmers markets for when they could start setting up if they were near residential zones. And then we, as Julia said, there was a steep learning curve on this project. Many of them start setting up at 5 a.m. right next to high-density residential, such as the Saturday morning one by Portland State, and they've never received any complaints, and we certainly haven't, because people tend to be quiet. I don't think a farm stand from a 10,000-square-foot garden is going to have a flood of people arriving at 7 a.m., lining up to purchase.
Well, I'd be interested to hear public testimony on that, because I think it is, that's the kind of thing that in a residential zone, not next to where there's an existing commercial zone where we've had a farmer's market, but this new kind of use, I think that that could be a source of.
Is this a farmer's market or a market
this
garden?
This is a market
this
garden.
Is for market gardens, right. But when we considered something for farmer's markets, we do have several farmer's markets in the middle of existing residential zones.
But they're just once a week, not every day for 10 weeks.
Do you, just on that point, if I could, because Parks runs the community garden program, as you know, do we track complaints from people generally about these various entities somewhere?
Yeah.
Farmers markets, community gardens, garden markets?
The Bureau of Development Services does track complaints, and there have been none on farmers markets or community gardens. Market gardens and food membership distribution sites have generally been flying very successfully under the radar. The food membership, many of the market gardens that exist now are in a gray area. And food membership distribution sites, most of the operators have been very careful to make sure their neighbors are happy. We have had, I believe, two cases where there were complaints. This is really embarrassing to have my phone go off.
It's the agriculture department.
Yes.
They're watching and they have an answer for the mayor.
I believe complaints about two of them, and one really was a commercial operation and moved, and the other one changed his operation.
We've received some complaints around cost barriers to gardens. I mean, sometimes people complain about fee structure. We've had some complaints about vandalism. And I get an occasional complaint from someone who says the garbage truck makes too much noise in the morning. But we have not, to my knowledge, received complaints on this subject.
Okay. Did you have more to pursue?
No, that's
I had a general question, too. So does anything here affect the ability of the Jones Beard Public Market to come into reality?
Nothing at all. Okay. It will make, if they wanted to locate outside, instead of in a building, it would make it easier.
Say that again?
If they wanted to be outside rather than in a building, it would make it easier for them to do. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing in here that makes those sorts of operations more difficult. There's a lot that makes them easier.
Okay.
That's the intention.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we have eight people signed up. Can you please call the first three?
All right, Leslie Paul Cosball, Michelle Leslie, and Chana Andler.
Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Did we have invited testimony that I've skipped? No, okay, good.
Well, good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners, good to see you. My name is Leslie Paul Cosbaugh, and I do live in Portland, and I was the founder and former director for Portland Parks Community Gardens. This past year, it's been my pleasure and privilege to serve on this advisory committee to the Urban Food Zoning Code update. I would like to thank all the fellow volunteers and the staff who helped with this effort, especially the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability professional staff, Julie Giesler, Steve Cohen, Jessica Richmond, and the Oregon Public Health Institute's Amy Gilroy. I would like to thank you, Mayor, and Commissioners for understanding the value of citizen participation in government, which makes a stronger community with respect and dignity for all. This City of Portland Code update affirms a long-standing culture of growing and accessing local healthful food. It validates the years of community organizing for the public good in the public and private spaces in the city, allowing Portlanders to find creative solutions for providing fresh, nutritious supply of fruits and vegetables available within every neighborhood. The skills learned in growing, preparing, distributing, and marketing food, and sharing this abundance with others who struggle, make Portland a better place for everyone. I recommend that you accept this food code update. It respects neighborhood livability by outlining reasonable codes and definitions for new and existing activities. And it builds in some leeway for continued creative solutions that promote health and wellness in an urban setting. Cities learn and governments assist. This is reflected in the Portland Plan and in the Peak Oil Task Force report. Community gardens got a formal start in 1975 when neighbors asked Portland Parks and Recreation to start a municipal program for people to grow their own food within the city in shared spaces. This effort is an effective way for families to build community relationships on public and private land through growing fruits and vegetables and improving their diet and their physical health. Although there is little change for community gardens in the code update, they are recognized now for all zones and in parks and open spaces. Community gardens are defined as legitimate and valued places within the city as a way to provide food, educate, and build neighborhood relationships with people and the environment. Community gardens, market gardens, CSAs, buying clubs, farmers markets, and more all play a part in Portland's health, sustainability, and security. I thank you for this time and for your continued support of the vitality and the diversity of Portland.
Thank you, and thank you for your great service on community gardens. Hi, welcome.
Hi. My name is Michelle Lassley, and I'm the president of the North Portland Food Buying Club, and I was also a member of the Code Development Advisory Group. I'm here to express our support for this plan. It is flexible, workable, very diverse, and overall we're pleased with the code because it helps our mission of bridging the gap between farm and city. We really enjoyed the process where Julia and Jessica solicited public input. From our beginning was a survey that we found out about and passed around, allowing them to tally over 800 responses. We help them learn about buying clubs and how diverse buying clubs are. We help them create very drastic and evolved changes that reinforce that flexibility and workable plan. My buying club has been around for over 2 years. We average about 50 member families. And per each buy, we have about 10 to 30 different families participating. We have many of our members are neighbors. And we work with our members to make sure that work is distributed in an equitable fashion, that we're minimizing impacts on neighborhoods by organizing pickups so that one member will pick up for their family and bring it to their section of houses in a different part of the neighborhood, and really enjoy working with the farmers. And we're really excited for the next steps of the process where we can get the word out once you approve the recommended changes.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your service. Hi.
Hi, my name is Hannah Ambler, and I'm the Vice President of the Montevilla Food Buying Club. And I had the honor also of serving on the CDAC. The Montevilla Food Buying Club operates primarily in the Mount Tabor, Montevilla, North and South Tabor, Sunnyside, and Richmond neighborhoods. We also frequently partner with the East Side Buying Club, which operates out of East Portland. Our club has slightly over 90 member households, and we offer group buys from natural food wholesalers like Frontier and Hummingbird, specialty buys like coffee from Cafe Mom in Eugene, and farm direct sales of produce and meat from entities like PD Farms, Heritage Farms Northwest, Little Gnome Farms, and starting this summer, produce from the Portland Growers Alliance, which is a market garden primarily populated by immigrants operating at the borders of Portland and in the Damascus area. Families participate in a buying club because it is a way for them to buy high-quality, pesticide-free, local and organic products at considerable savings. For example, our members can buy local, organic, humanely raised, and I do mean completely organic feed, corn and soy-free, directly from one of our farmers for as little as $3.50 to $3.75 a dozen, as opposed to paying $4.95 at New Seasons and over $5 at a farmer's market. Last year, in cooperation with the Eastside Portland Buying Club, we moved over 900 pounds of pesticide-free stone fruits, peaches, plums, nectarines, through 45 families, thus allowing people to buy stone fruit for as little as a dollar a lug, you know, a dollar per pound per lug, or $1.50 if you were buying it at much less, which is a really remarkable price for food. Our club operates 4 pickup sites, 2 in homes in commercial zones, and 2 in homes at residential zones. We will soon be adding a new zone for our Azure drop, which will be in partnership with the Highland Christian Church on Gleason Street, and we'll include their members into our buying club. Most of our buys occur once per month, and although there are 90 members plus in our club, there are rarely more than 40 households that participate in any one buy. Our club places great importance in being good neighbors, and our members sign detailed membership agreements about being courteous and timely with their pickups. Our club steering committee unanimously supports the current proposals. We feel they're flexible, workable, and help establish food buying clubs as a legitimate urban food activity. They provide clear guidelines for setting up and running pickup sites in residential neighborhoods, which protect the residential character of those neighborhoods, but still work for the buying club and its members. We are delighted to have these guidelines to work with, and we thank the Bureau and the City Council for including buying clubs in this process.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate your volunteer efforts.
Next three
are Ron Paul, Shanako Aldrich, and Will Newman.
Ron, why don't you go ahead?
Commissioners, I'm Ron Paul, the director of the James Beard Public Market and also affiliated with Merrillhurst University's new master's program in food and society. And want to congratulate you first from a broader point of view of embracing food as part of your discussion for one of the first times, certainly in recent memory, in recent focus groups for Merrillhurst's new program on food policy, one of the young participants said that studying food policy is the new urban planning. And it's a forgotten part of the discipline of thinking about our city. And I think it speaks well that Portland is beginning to acknowledge the role of food and bringing food issues into more immediate contact with the public. We have been so distanced from our food over the years, literally shrink-wrapped and removed from it, that beginning to look at integrating food into the neighborhoods in a multiple number of ways, from farmers markets, buying clubs, CSA pickups, food is and should be a daily part of our lives. We should celebrate it, we should not hide it, and I speak in support of the measure in front of you to begin that process. But I also want to caution that this should be the beginning and not the end. There are many, many issues on the horizon for food that are challenges in terms of equity and access. There are issues that can be solved in ways that this ordinance doesn't yet address. For instance, repurposing large buildings for vertical agriculture, and how do we zone those and make them an integral part of the food system for our communities. Issues like this are happening in Chicago, in New York, other metropolitan areas, and I just want to make sure that we keep our eyes open for the future and not be complacent about the progress that you're ready to make today. Thank you.
Thanks. Hi.
Hi. My name is Shanika Aldrich, and I'm a social worker, and I am representing the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. I work for the Interfaith Food and Farm Partnership, and they sent me here to testify with a letter. So dear members of Portland City Council, on behalf of EMO and the Interfaith Food and Farm Partnership, IFFP, we're pleased to provide this testimony on the Urban Food Zoning Code Update Recommended Draft. The subtitle of this plan, Enhancing Portlanders' Connection to Their Food and Community, is on target in what the code should accomplish for citizens. EMO has been involved in community food efforts since 1997 and advocated for the establishment of the Portland Policy Council in early 2000. We are encouraged by the city integration of food into planning, zoning, and policies. Our values of justice, human dignity, and environmental stewardship compel us to work for healthier and more equitable food systems. IFFP staff and volunteers have provided input at early hearings and on the advisory council. We are pleased with the thorough discussion of various issues regarding codes and can enhance and expand distribution of local food and support urban market gardens and community gardens while protecting neighborhoods from the adverse impact. For over 7 years, IFFP has been helping congregations connect to local farmers through farmers' tables, CSA, and buying clubs, as well as supporting congregations in developing community gardens and community kitchens. Zoning has been a barrier to these projects for several occasions. The recommended code provides strong support and clear guidelines as we expand this work. The following codes are especially important to fully using the assets of faith congregations in creating a more equitable, accessible, and sustainable local food system. Number one, farmer markets and farmer tables are allowed on institutional sites without a land use review. Often congregations are located in residential areas, and this has been a gray area in the past. This code will ensure that farmer markets are allowed on all institutional sites without the land use review and can operate for 70 days in the year instead of only being allowed twice a year for 5 consecutive weeks. Number two, adding a section of food membership distribution sites and ensuring that they are allowed on all institutional sites. Prior to this recommended code, There was nothing written about food distribution sites. Having the code address food membership distribution sites specifically ensure that these important models for creating better access to health.
You're doing great. Just
okay, keep
going,
because it is
don't,
long.
Don't pay attention to that.
Access of healthy food can continue to expand in the future. Institutions like congregations often have the parking and space to ensure that impact on neighborhoods are minimal. 3, continuing to ensure that community gardens are allowed on institutional sites